understanding the view of the Rambam and the idea of Rotzani and what the role of Rotzani is according to the Rambam. So yesterday, if you recall, so we saw the Nesivis, who was quoted as having a different understanding of why there should be a need for Rotzani by a get as opposed to by a korban. I'm sorry, as opposed to mecher. That in the case of the Gemara Baba Basra, so when you sell something, so there you don't need rotzani. But when it comes to a get, so you need rotzon, so therefore we ultimately need rotzani. And he was commenting on the Psak and the Shulchan Aruch and Choshen Mishpat in Reish Hay that records like that, as far as mecher is concerned, that we don't need rotzani. It's interesting, there is a discussion we'll have to have a little bit more about just whether it is totally muskum that even with a get, do we need rotzani? And do all the Rishonim agree? So the Rambam is requiring it here. Is it clear that everyone else would agree? There is somewhat of a discussion. If you saw the Tosfos, and tell me what you think about this, the Tosfos in Bava Basra, I remember Tosfos raised the question of why is it that we don't say that being forced to give a get, if the Gemara compares that to Luhu Vizavin, that is just like someone who's forced to sell something, and that takes effect. So asks Tosfos, why shouldn't we say that it's more comparable to Tluhu V'yoyev? You're asking somebody to give something away as a gift, where we don't have any basis to assume that that should work. So we discussed one answer in Tosfos. Right, what was that answer? That the mitzvah makes it like a mecher. So that makes it as if it's a transaction. And we mentioned how the Rashash understood that because mitzvahs are worth money, so you'll get the mitzvah schar, and that's as if you're being paid. And we suggested it could also mean something else. It could just mean that just like when somebody enters into a transaction, so it obligates him to follow through, so too the Torah's chiyuv has the same effect. And we compared it to the statement of the Gemara about a Shomer Aveda having a status of a Shomer Sachar. But there is another answer in Tosfos. Tosfos has an answer before that, which doesn't really hold by the end, but Tosfos over there says that it could also be that a married man has monetary obligations to his wife. And if he's divorced, so he's freed from those obligations. So therefore, one could argue it's as if he's being paid, and therefore for that reason, the get is more comparable to a mecher, to something that he's selling, something he's giving away in exchange for payment. So there are some who consider that maybe according to that answer in Tosfos, Tosfos would say that he doesn't have to say rotzani, that just like when you sell something, you don't need to say rotzani. So too, this guy is essentially selling. He's giving up his wife and he's getting in payment the savings that he has in terms of Sherek Sus Viono. Yes. So I think the question is that I'm not so totally convinced by this, so that's why I'm not sure if the Yechiluk is so strong. But I think the idea is if it's only the mitzvah that does it, so then maybe based on the Rambam, you'll need an acknowledgement that the mitzvah is worthwhile to you in order for it to count. So you say, Rotzani, I'm interested in the mitzvah, so then, okay, you're getting mitzvah points for it. And it's not really so willing, but that's where the Rambam brings in the Pentaliyah. But if you say that the idea is you're basically being paid, so if it's really comparable to Mecher, you give something and you get paid, so it goes through. So if by Mecher you don't need Rotzani, so then maybe here also, if it's really that we're considering this actual cash, not just that mitzvah spiritually is worth money, but this is actual cash that he's saving in his pocket because of the fact that he doesn't have to do a Sherek Sus V'yono, so maybe that should get him off the hook. Hi.
It seems the savings is really what he's emphasizing here, which you don't really receive anything.
See, now that's interesting, because if you want to further compare that to what we said before about Shomer Aveda, just that Gemara, it's interesting on a couple of levels, because that Gemara, it's in the beginning of Hakones, in Bava Kamma, the sixth parak of Bava Kamma, That there the Gemara says that the person who's watching lost property is called a Shomer Sacher, even though he's not getting any cash. So why is that? What's the machlokas, whether it's a Shomer Chinam or Shomer Sacher? But if he's called a Shomer Sacher, you have to explain, where is he getting paid from? So the Gemara has two possible answers. One is the one we said, Rachmana Meshavdei, which could be comparable to the second answer in Tosfos, that the mitzvah is what does it. And then we saw two ways to understand that. Either just the mitzvah is worth something spiritually, or the mitzvah commits you, just like a transaction. The other answer in Tosfos, it's very relevant to our first half of the semester about tzedakah, is the idea of pruta de Rav Yosef. That Rav Yosef taught this notion that if one is involved in the mitzvah of Shomer Aveda, so then he will be exempt from tzedakah if somebody comes to ask him for tzedakah. So he'll save money on the tzedakah. Now that's much less of a savings, right? Because that's pretty far-fetched, that just that time when he's involved in taking care of the Aveda, somebody's going to ask him, so it's a much more moderate savings. And yet the Gemara considers that that savings might be enough to qualify him as a Shomer Sacher. So maybe that's what the first answer in Tosfos is saying, is that if he's not paying Sherek Sus Viona, so then that's actually money in his pocket, so it's Ki'ilu, he's getting paid in order to issue this get, and therefore it's like a mecher. So that opens up all kinds of questions, because the two standards we just compared are not totally comparable. Right? Shomer Aveda and the get situation are not really totally comparable, because Shomer Aveda, to consider that like a Shomer Sacher, so we don't really have a rate for what's called the Shomer Sacher. So if you're getting paid, you're getting paid. So we could say that a shtickle of mitzvah is enough. But here, when you're talking, you really want to compare it to mecher, so then it has to be comparable to the value. If you're paying only a portion of the value of the item, so we'd still call that a matana. We say that somebody who's forced to sell something ultimately is selling it. That's if he's really getting the actual value. But if he's only getting part of the value, then it goes back to being a matana. So that's an issue that comes up. We'll talk about this more. So the poskim discuss, or Bitzal Ashkenazi has a tshuva about this, who I didn't realize till recently was the Arizal's uncle. Very interesting idea. Anyway, but Ashkenazi point. But anyway, so Bitzal Ashkenazi, the author of the Shita Mekubetz, says, has a tshuva about this, that what if the husband gets paid to give the get? So then does that enter into a slew of his oven situation, say, even without the justification for kfiyah? So the Acharonim note that it's hard to do that, because if you pay somebody to sell lower than the value of the item, it's not going to really work. And here, by definition, whatever money you're going to give him is going to be lower than the infinite value of his wife. So how does this answer in Tosfos then work? That's something to think about. So the Rotsa Ani, it's a discussion, as we see here, what exactly it's supposed to accomplish and whether or not it's really necessary. The Chassam Sofer, in his Chidushim to that Daf and Bava Basra, Daf Memches, the Chassam Sofer has a very lot to say about this. And he ultimately assumes that the requirement of Rotsa Ani is Drabanim, that Minatorah would work. And the Avnei Ezer has a truth about this, which maybe we'll talk about in more detail. Another interesting trivia fact, the Avnei Nezer was born the year that the Chassam Sofer died. So to quote them in the same breath, it's a torch passing. The Chassam Sofer died in 1839, the year that the Avnei Nezer was born.
As one son sets, another rises.
Exactly, right? So if that's the case, I mean, so regardless of that being the case, the Avnei Nezer has the tshuva where he says that the Rotsa Ani is because when we force gittin nowadays, if we do, so really we're in trouble, because you need Bez Din Mumchen, as we saw from the Gemara in gittin, in order to do that. And we don't have a Bez Din Mumchen. Now the Gemara addressed that, right? The Gemara said, what's the Gemara's answer to that question if we don't have Bez Din Mumchen? Shlichusayu, right? So we have that. So assumes the Avnei Nezer, no, Shlichusayu, that only works on a level midrabanan. But Minatorah, it's not effective. So in order for it to be effective, Minat Torah, so you'd have to say that he has to actually say Rotzani, and that Rotzani will work because of what we mentioned last week, Dvarim Shebalei Veinam Dvarim. So that will take care of the Daraisa part that's not there. Yes, sir.
Really, the important
lesson is of it not being
Daraisa. I mean, if the marriage itself is not Daraisa,
what happens if
the actual people say it? Well, the marriage generally is Daraisa.
So, that's the problem. That's according to the way he's the Avinezer's understanding, is that you need both together. That in order to carry out the Kfiya, you need a Bezdin, but that Bezdin is only effective. Partially, it's only effective midrabbana. So, in order for the get to be kosher, that's why you'll need the rotsani in order to make it valid on the daraisa level because of dvarim shabalei vein and dvarim. So, what he's saying will count. Now, there is
So, why do we need to, then? Why do we need smicha b'chal for if dvarim shabalei vein and dvarim? Why does basin have to get involved?
Well, there's two parts. You need the bezdin to do the kfiya.
But we don't, right? Because, Dvarim shall believe in the Dvarim, you can just rely on that every time. You can just have anybody do it.
You mean if he's just saying Rotsani by himself? Right. Like, I mean, so if you assume that a get doesn't need Bezdin, which halacha we are machmir for, right. You're saying that theoretically he could be, you know, you could have a non-Bezdin and have the get, so the Rotsani should suffice by itself. I mean, practically speaking, it's not really going to help because we need the Bezdin
saying,
anyway.
Because we don't have smicha today, we can rely on.
Because we don't smicha today, then we have shlichusayu.
Right.
But shlichusayu is not enough because shlichusayu will not make it work on a level mina Torah. So the rotsani with the dvarim shebelev is going to work to make it miratzon, and the kfiya then comes through the bezdin, which happens to be a drabbanan bezdin.
So then we should just rely on that in the first place. We shouldn't require smicha, even if there were smicha. We shouldn't require it, because at least on a Daraisa level, we can accomplish what we want to accomplish without.
If he says Rotsani.
Right.
Right. Maybe you wouldn't need it then. You wouldn't need the Rotsani then, according to this explanation. Now, there is an interesting tshuva about this by a Rav from Antwerp, Chaim David Weiss, who wrote the tshuvas of Vayan David. So he has a tshuva where he disagrees with this Avinezer. And from a couple of points. And he also notes that this whole Dvarim Shebalei Veinam Dvarim point is not going to help so much, because we also assume, it seems like it from the Gemara, that yes, we don't read your mind to see what you're thinking and take that into consideration. But in Umdana Demuchach, if it's really clear what you're thinking, so then Dvarim Shebalei Havi Dvar. So here, it is pretty clear, the guy's kicking and screaming. Right, so it's hard to call that Dvarim Shebalev as something that we just would have to read his mind to know what's going on. So he assumes that if this is really dependent on Dvarim Shebalev, we would not be able to rely on that too comfortably. So the topic of this tshuva is just interesting. It's in Chelek Gimel, around 7 Pei Beis, I think. If you want to take a look, it's available on HebrewBooks.org. So he talks about, you know, practically speaking today, can you be kofa get based on just v'yahav t'lerecha kamocha, right? So we mentioned the Tshuva Sechzam Sofer said that v'yahav t'lerecha kamocha might be the reason. So let's be kofa based on that. So he says, ultimately, he doesn't think we follow this Sechzam Sofer. And he says that the fact that the Gemara invokes mitzvah l'shmoa divrei chachamim is the reason. So it's not based on v'yahav t'lerecha kamocha. I think it's a raya against the Chassam Sofer. And therefore, the point being that you need to actually have a mitzvah in order to be kof for the get. He also notes that in terms of the Avnei Nezer's point, that to be mechalik between Daraisa and Darabana, and this addresses a little bit what Aryeh was asking, he says it doesn't matter whether they are a bezdin, a level minatorah, or a bezdin midrabana. That if it's the mitzvah l'shmoa divrei chachamim, that's the motivation. So then that applies to a drabbanan also. So ultimately, if it's really the power of the mitzvah that's making him do it, why should we care if the idea is that it's his das that agrees because he wants to follow the mitzvah? So then we don't have to care whether the mitzvah that he's following is deraisa or derabanan. In the end of the day, his das is still there. Yes, sir?
Is it so true that there's a mitzvah to follow bati dinim that don't have smicha?
Well, that's a fair question. How exactly you assess what rises to that level. It seems like for this purpose, yes. You know, it's a complex question. The truth is, what are the parameters of Lo-Sasser? Is it only because of Lo-Sasser that there is such an idea? So it's a fair question to ask in general. It seems like from all the contextual elements here that there is such a mitzvah, because otherwise we can't make all the parts that we know are Shul HaLacha fit. So let's assume, even though the question is a fair one, let's assume for now that that is the case. So says the Avihan David, says he disagrees with the Avnei Nezer because it's going to be Dvarim Shebelev, heavy Dvarim, because it's going to be clear what's going on. And we don't have to worry about the Darabanan Daraisa distinction because it's all about him deciding to do it based on the mitzvah. So if there's a mitzvah, Daraisa Darabanan, he decides to do it. Doesn't matter where the mitzvah comes from. So ultimately says it's the mitzvah Shmua Divrei Chachamim that does it. And not V'yahavta L'Reicha Kamocha. And therefore, we can't, nowadays, if you have a situation where we don't have a clear mitzvah, but you feel, well, it's a V'yahavta L'Reicha Kamocha, you're not going to be able to be kofa again based on that. However, what he recommends in a situation he was talking about is we also mentioned that another approach to how Kfiyah Begitin works is that if there are marital obligations that the husband's not performing or can't be performing, so Beis Din is allowed to compel him to perform those obligations. And he could get out of the obligations by giving a get. So therefore, that's a valid approach. It's based on the Shach. That's a valid approach that you're essentially being kofa not on the get. You're being kofa on the monetary obligations, which Tosfos and Baba Basra had referred to. And if his approach is, I'm not going to do these mitzvahs, so I want to get out of it by giving a get, as a function of the kfiyah on the obligations, that's legitimate. Okay, so far so good? All right, it's very interesting stuff. Yes, sir?
How does that help the situation where you apply pressure on the monetary obligations? Why can't the husband say that
he's mechuyev to do that. So a Beis Din can compel, a Beis Din can enforce monetary rulings between two people, right?
Yeah.
So if you have a debt to somebody, so a Beis Din can compel that. So here, the monetary obligations of the wedding, the husband is obligated in. So the Beis Din has a right to say, we're going to get involved in that. And then the process would be, listen, either do this, or release yourself from the situation. And if you release yourself from the situation as a function of that pressure, that should be okay because the pressure was legitimately applied because of the monetary component. So this all connects to the monetary component, and that's a legitimate issue. Just parenthetically, this comes up again in contemporary cases. You hear this question all the time. When I point out these kind of issues, these are issues we'll get into more detail a little bit later, but just to illustrate it a little bit, that sometimes the question comes up, you get this question all the time, let's say a woman is trying to get her husband to give her a get and he's not doing it, so she wants to know, is it legitimate to sue him for whatever grounds she may have? And the understanding will be that if he wants to get out of the lawsuit, he can give the get. So essentially to create pressure through the lawsuit. So we'll get into more detail about that, but there you have basically two shilas. Right? One shila is the isser of arkos, right? So you're not allowed to go to secular court, but sometimes you are, so you have to adjudicate that question separately. The posuk has to figure out, is she justified in going to court in the first place, in terms of that isser of arkos? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. And then for the second question, which maybe is more serious, even the first question is also a serious one, but the second question is this tactic an apostle to get? Right? If the man only gives a get in order to save himself from a lawsuit, so is that considered to be a get musa? So one of the considerations will be, is the debt that she's going after him, is the charge that she's coming with, is it a legitimate charge or not? If it's something that he's really chayiv in, so then, if he wants to get out of that chiyuv by trading the get for that exemption, that's his own decision. You know, that really, he's chayiv however much money. And this is different than k'sher k'susvon, and not necessarily because it's an inherent marital obligation. But let's say whatever it is. Let's say he baveled her in some way. So if she has legitimate monetary claim, so she could say, now you owe me $100,000, but I'll let you off the hook if you give me a get. So then, okay, then maybe he can say, all right, so I'm choosing of my free will to give you the get so that I don't have to pay you the money that I'm mechuyev to. But if she's coming with a claim that she's not entitled to, if it's a not halachically justified claim, so then that becomes essentially extortion. And for him to say, okay, I'll give you the get to get out of your extortion, that get might be illegitimate. So this is one of the issues that we'll have to figure out in terms of how this process plays out. Was Aaron up first?
So the same question with the get law?
So the get law gets complicated. Again, well, obviously, God willing, we'll get to all this. But then it becomes, you know, part of the question. So are we talking about legitimate obligations or illegitimate obligations? We're talking about obligations. You know, one of the elements of the prenup, which also we'll have to get to in more detail, is that we're talking about chiyuvim that flow directly from the marriage. So the assumption is that it's not a monetary pressure that's created by something external, but it's a monetary pressure that's a function of his actual obligations to her. And therefore, if he chooses to say, all right, in order to get out of the obligations, I'll give the get, so then that's considered to be a get of free will. But if the money is punitive, so then it becomes a much more complicated question, is that money he's actually obligated it.
Hi. So one of the claims in this is that by doing it before the marriage, they're taking on responsibilities. He's accepting the possibility of having to pay money obligations at the end. But some would say that taking on the obligation wasn't real because he never expected it to happen.
Right. Again, we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves because we have to get to this in more detail, which God willing we will. But the objection is, you know, we consider that asmachta. That asmachta being, if somebody takes on a monetary obligation, let's say, but the very nature of the obligation is that it's not something you ever expect to happen, so you accept it because you think you won't have to do it, which is one of the reasons the Gemara says gambling is a problem, because you commit to pay if you lose, you don't expect to lose. So too, is that the situation here? That's one of the fears. That's one of the considerations. So, you know, that's part of what's tricky. That's why also, you know, the prenup doesn't say it's $1 million a day. It's got to be some number that makes some kind of sense within the framework of marital support. And again, all of these issues are issues we'll get to in more detail, but just as we finish this introductory stage before Yontif, so just kind of putting on the table what some of these questions are. So that shuvah that they end up very interesting in terms of what he highlights about the whole Rotsa Ani concept, and about what could be a legitimate approach to encouraging, again, nowadays, if there isn't a clear basis for kfiyah. Okay, so now just to add a little bit more from what this mechaber says, this Rabbi Goldberg. So we discussed yesterday what essentially was a machlokas, the Chavis Yair and the Rama. Right? And this Rabbi Goldberg here ends up supporting the Rama on this issue, that according to the Rambam, the purpose of the makos are that they weaken your objection. Your objection comes from the Yetzirah. And therefore, once that's distracted, your Yetzirah is not pressuring you anymore, so then you can give the Pitul Yid full voice, and the get is coming out of your good wishes. Well, the Chavis Yair said differently. The Chavis Yair said that no, it's not true. It's not true the Yetzirah was knocked out, because if they would actually stop hitting you now, you'd go back to being recalcitrant. So the Yetzirah is still there. So the only reason you're going to give it is because of fear of future malchus. And that seems to be a straight-out onus. So how do you assess that? So in the understanding of the Chavis Yair, that's where the Rotsa Ani is for. The Rotsa Ani is to say that even if you would stop hitting me, I still want to do it. I still want to give it. And that's going to make it work. And then he goes on to say that it's not the mitzvah that makes it happen, but it is the common sense that makes it happen. Because it's rational for a person to want to give a get in such a circumstance where he's not gaining anything from the relationship, and he'll just be letting her move on. So then that's rational. So even if we don't really think he agrees with this, but there's a possibility because it's rational, so therefore that's what makes it work, not the mitzvah. Right? That was the chavisir that we saw yesterday. So Rabbi Goldberg, of the Sefer Eilu Shekol Filahotzi, so he says, no, the Rambam is right. And he explained it with a mashal. And he said, what exactly is the issue here? What exactly is the problem the Chavos Yair is having? Right? He's saying, oh, the fact that you'll go back to being recalcitrant if they stop hitting you, that shows that really that's the real you. The real you is the recalcitrant you. So, says Rabbi Goldberg, no, it's not true. It's mashal ma'adavar doma. Let's look at the Yetzer Hara as a kidnapper. And the Beis Din as your friends who are there to help you fulfill your true rasa. So if the kidnappers come and they hold you hostage, so if your friends come and start wailing on them, so then you'll be able to run away. So yes, it's true that if they stop hitting them, then they're going to go back to going after you, and you'll be back in the same situation. But that doesn't mean that that's the real you. That's still a captivity. It just happens to be that in order for you to be free of the captivity, you need the pressure to be continuously applied. But still, it's the real you that's coming out whenever your captors are distracted. So based on that, he wants to address the following point that we left off with yesterday. So what do you think about this issue, which if you saw from the Beis Yosef that was on the Makoros in the past, the question of what would the Rambam say about a mummer? Now, if you have somebody who has declared that he's not interested in being Jewish, he is converted to another religion, he has made it clear that he's not interested in following the mitzvahs of the Torah. So if you recall, the Beis Yosef quotes from the Maharik that while there is an approach to say that even for a mummer, kfiyah beget would work anyway because of afgeinu, but the Rambam svar is a problem. That for the Rambam, you'd be in trouble. If the husband was a mummer, the Rambam's logic wouldn't apply. What do you think of that? Do you accept that approach? Are you?
You could say that someone who's a mummer, that's part of the Yetzer Hara. That's exactly what we're trying to weaken when we give lashes. So the true of him is still there. The Pentiliyid, you know, you say that he's the Yisrael. So it doesn't matter that he's become, I would just assume that that's the Yisrael taking over, and that also applies to him not wanting to give get, and therefore beating him would be returning him to the real Yisrael state.
Okay, so it does seem to be some basis to say like that, even though that's not the way the Marik assumed, the Beis Yosef assumed. So here he discusses how others did see it that way. The way basically that you said. So.
You wouldn't have questioned these opinions if you felt that way that I already said.
I'm sorry,
what? Off the ground, right?
What'd you say?
The question when you get off the ground if you are holding that way that being a mummer is no.
Right, it would seem like we don't, you know, by necessarily have to assume like this. It's just, it's building off the Rambam's phrasing that everyone wants to be Jewish and wants to do the mitzvah, so therefore that works. So then they're saying, oh, really? Everyone? Not everyone. Some people have given up their citizenship. Some people have renounced their connection. So such a person also? Hi?
Is a mummer someone who converts to another religion or someone who just stops practicing Judaism?
So it could be a little bit of both. You know, and you find both words here. So meshumad is somebody really who converts to another religion. A mummer is really somebody who has denied the authority of the mitzvahs.
So does he have a status in jail?
So it depends on the context, and depends on the era, and depends on all the elements.
If it's on the side of the Jew, then there's no marriage.
Right, except that that doesn't work, because we don't. You know, we have kind of a ambivalent attitude towards him. On the one hand, for some purposes, he doesn't have the status of a Jew. On the other hand, he still is technically Jewish because of this phrase somebody just quoted, Yisrael, afal pi shachat Yisrael, that ultimately you can't give up your Jewish status. Is that always true? That's a discussion. I think I mentioned the other day that Rav Aaron Lichtenstein has an essay in English that was printed in one of the volumes about a case that happened in Israel a few decades ago, the Brother Daniel case, about is there ever a point at which your involvement with another religion is so extensive that you have forfeited your Judaism? But for now, let's assume that you can't. You can't give up the Judaism. Hi.
Wouldn't it also just be a question about like what, how you remember, meaning if it's like qualitatively different or quantitatively different? Meaning,
yeah,
just like,
I mean, like
a
just
worse era than this pendulum is still there?
Maybe, except that it's an interesting question to put on the table. You know, is that really the issue here? I'm not sure, because I think this is a very focused point, in saying that the Rambam says that it's the desire to do mitzvos that is inherently there. So the question is does everyone have this desire? What if I really made it clear I don't have any desire to do any mitzvos?
Well,
and therefore...
Question, so wouldn't that just be the same question, saying I don't have a desire to do this specific mitzvah of giving death?
Maybe not. I think the point would be there. You're interested in mitzvahs in general, and therefore, there's so much to, this is why there's such a fascinating sugya, there's so much you could explore within this. You know, is it even true that he doesn't want to do the mitzvah of giving a get? And unfortunately, this is also something that I've seen from involvement in these situations, that even people who are very stark philosophically about some of these issues, when they're involved in a case themselves, all of a sudden, you know, it changes, and it's because there's rationalization. So there is a fascinating comment to the Stipler in his Sefer on Chumash and Birkas Peretz. And the Stipler says that the Gemara says in Nedarim that even though you can't take a shvua to strengthen a mitzvah, it doesn't take effect because mitzvahs are invulnerable to shvuas, both to support mitzvahs and to contradict mitzvahs. Nonetheless, the Gemara says, if a person says that I'm going to learn something, Eshna Parakzu, that it's effective. So the Gemara says, what do you mean it's effective? Mushbav Yomer Sinai, you have an obligation in the Torah to learn, so how could you take another Shvua that's going to obligate you to learn what you already obligated it? So the Gemara has a couple of answers. One of the answers is, Shari Leila Inish Lizruzde Nafshe. We see that the person is permitted to motivate himself. So he wants to take this Shvua to motivate himself, we accept that. So the Stipler in Sefer Nachumish Berkas Paris, Stipler asks, well, how's it motivating? If you know it doesn't work, if this, are we saying it's just a fake shvua, but it's okay because it'll motivate you? Why are you motivated by something that doesn't take effect? So the Stipler has a very important insight into psychology over there. He says, how does it work, this whole situation? What's the whole purpose of taking a shvua like this? He says, the idea is that a person says that the reason the person is not learning in the first place at this time is because he convinced himself that he's not really obligated, that whatever chiyuv he has of Talmud Torah doesn't cover this moment in time, doesn't cover this context. So then, the effect of the shvua is to cancel that kind of rationalization. Because you say, mimonavshach, if you're mechuyuv, so then you're mechuyuv. If you're not mechuyuv, then your shvua takes effect. So your shvua will not take effect on top of the chiyuv, but then the chiyuv's there. So it's one way or the other, but you come out obligated either way, either because of the actual chiyuv or because of the shvua. It's a fascinating point. So it means that the Gemara's statement of Sharu Leila Inish Luzruzde Nafshe means that a person motivates himself by cutting off the path of rationalization. Right? That he's basically saying that if, whatever extent, I'm able to tell myself I'm not obligated, I am obligated, because now I filled in the blanks with this shvua. So that's the way people operate in general. So here too, it could be, we're assuming, your question is based on the assumption that, oh, why does the Rambam say this guy wants to follow mitzvahs? He doesn't want to follow this mitzvah. So the same way you should say that mitzvahs in general are enough to bring him into this mitzvah, so too, a Meshumah doesn't hold from any mitzvah, so too we could say there's a general thing that brings him into all mitzvahs and this one. But it's possible the comparison is not a perfect one. It's possible that this guy who the Rambam is describing, the non-Meshumah, not only does he believe in mitzvahs in general, he even believes in the mitzvah involved in the get and the chachamim. But in this case, they're wrong, which is what you see every day. Oh, you know, everyone should listen to Beis Din, except what he said to me, that the Beis Din messed up. But everyone else has a mitzvah l'shmo divrei chachamim, everyone else has a mitzvah to give a God. In this case, I mean, come on, she's crazy, what do you want from me? But in every other case, there's a chiyuv. And that's, you know, it's ma'isim b'chol yom, you know, that's the mentality. So it's not even clear that what the Rambam is describing is a person who holds from all the mitzvos except the mitzvah of giving a get when it's mechuyev. Maybe he holds from that mitzvah too, but doesn't think it applies to him. Hi.
I know this is kind of off topic, but maybe we could apply a stipler to it, a different mishnah, Gemara and Pesachim, that has the guy tell his children that if they get to Yerushalayim, whoever gets to Yerushalayim first gets the carbon Pesach.
Mm-hmm.
And it's revealed in the Gemara and Farshim on the mishnah that you can't make it a mystery who's going to get a carbon Pesach, you have to know who you're
right.
giving it to. So really, everyone, all of his children are getting it, it's just to be mazaris them. To want to get to Yerushalayim to eat it. So maybe we could apply to the stipler that maybe they would say, oh, it's too far away, I don't want to do it. And by making them do this kind of race and giving them a little bit more of a chizit.
I think you're right, although I don't think you even need the stipler for that, because that's probably just, you know,
what.
Probably. But, you know, here, this plays more on this interesting dynamic between chiyuv and rationalization, and saying that the phrase, shar l'shruzei nafshe, means that I will fill in all my bases by addressing that which is missing here. So maybe here too, the Rabbi says this is a person who holds from mitzvahs, and even holds from this mitzvah, but he let himself be convinced that he doesn't have a chiyuv here, so now this comes in. So what if he doesn't hold from mitzvahs? He doesn't hold from anything, he's a meshumad, so then should it still apply? So I think there is a basis to say, like Aryeh is saying, that there still is a pintel yid that comes in. And as we'll see in a second, a lot of great achronim who do say like that. I remember as a kid once reading a biography of somebody, a prominent American artist who was born Jewish and had converted. I think he converted to Unitarianism, which used to be a popular way to assimilate, because Unitarians, they don't believe in the Trinity, so it's not so Avodazaradik, or whatever it is. But so he had converted out of Judaism, though, officially. And then, as the biography related, then he had a heart attack or something, which he survived, and he was quoted as saying, you know, it'll take more than that to knock out this old Jew. You know, meaning that he still identified as a Jew, even after he had converted out, but that Basof Yomov, when you came down to his identity, he still saw himself as a Jew, even though he had publicly associated himself with another religion. So, who knows what really is the status of a Mishumid, and who knows if that case I just quoted is reflective of everything, but theoretically it's a possibility. So, here, this is a point that he discusses over here, this with Goldberg. He says, it's really not so obvious why the Marik, and he quotes the Maritats and others, say what they say in the Rambam. It's so obvious. Rambam Right, the Rambam says, he's talking about every Jew who really wants to do mitzvahs, but the Yetzer overtakes him. Why can't you say, like Aryeh just said, that the fact that he became a mumver is also the Yetzirah? So why should that be fundamentally different from any other type of refusal to do a mitzvah? So why don't we say again that the same kind of dynamic is going on here, even for the mumver? So then he quotes, he says that the Maritats we mentioned before did discuss this, and he says, quote, Afal gav di eish lomar, di afilo mumer otzo lios mi Yisrael, asher Yisrael talk for lamir, lekele meimar hachi. The Maritats says that you could have said this, that the mumer also wants to be Jewish, but his Yitzhahara overtake him. No, I don't think so. Elakeven shehimer lo yishayach taimu da Rambam, the heavy get bottle. No, but rather, since he converted, that shows that the Rambam's reason doesn't apply and the get's no good. Afal bi shadid no sin bi Yisrael lakofo bi yishkoch b'deir lakofo or bi get vatel lefishu honest. So, basically, he doesn't answer the question, but he felt the question, as he puts it. He hear Gish, but you know, he's aware of your objection, but he doesn't think it's true. No, he thinks, okay, yes, maybe you could say that, but no. He converted out, he's declaring he's not interested in any mitzvahs. Hi.
What if the reason why the person became a mumer in the first place is from force, like an inquisition?
Oh, so then presumably you would say all the more so.
Right? But we don't know if he's, what's it called, Marano or anything like that. Maybe the original purpose of him becoming a mumer was force, and he didn't want to, but now it could be
right.
He very much believes in it.
I think you would definitely find those saying that, you know, that the Rambam's words should very much apply, because the whole, we don't even know the Rambam doesn't apply with a full-blown mummer, but especially if the mummer himself has, or the Meshumet himself has indicated that that really his ratzon is like that, then I think all the more so one would say that the Rambam's logic would apply. So here he quotes the Riaz, quoted in the Shulta Gibarim to Gidden, who writes as follows: Gabi Yisrael Mumer Lavodos Kachave Kosev Shafal Pi Shein Choshen Ala Torah Vela Mitzvahs Ein Lahem Mitzvah Lishmod Vechachamim. Even though they're not interested in the Torah and mitzvahs, and they don't feel they have a mitzvah to listen to the rabbis, Hoel V'Gem Usa B'Din V'Din Arnaisa Ka Torah Al Pi Dayani Yisrael. For Omer Befev Rotzani, since the get is being done Musa, but halachically Musa, and following the din of the Torah, and he says Rotzani, Afal Pish Einim Asratz Velibo Roy Lomer Bezed Varim Shabalei Vedim Devarim. Still, we can say that his words are going to be definitive, even regardless of its lack of matching his heart. So we have to say. So here we have a Rishon now saying this. So you have to say then that the hitting has now gotten rid of his Yetzirah and he's doing this willingly. And just like the Tshuvas Oneg Yontif, he quotes here, says this in the words of the Rambam, that since the Rambam writes by this Get Musa Kedin, Kfar Gireish Meretzono, and doesn't write Gomer Umigarish, that shows you the Rambam holds that if it's Ma'usa Kedin, Afilu Lodishtana Daito Ligmor Belibo Lesratzos Ligarish Mikrinami Lutzono. The standard of Ritzono is satisfied by his saying he's going to do it, even if it doesn't really match his heart. So now he quotes a couple of Gedolei Achronim who also say that the Rambam's logic would apply even to a Mummer. The Chassam Sofer and the Chazon Ish. So the Chassam Sofer, Evan Ezra, and Chelik Beis, and Simon Lamed Ches, quotes the Rabbeinu Tam. The Rabbeinu Tam had a chumrah that the name written in a get should not be one's non-Jewish name. If one converted to a non-Jewish religion and took on that name, so that should not be used in the get. And he says, why? So listen to this, says the Chassam Sofer. The Rov Mumrim Eina Megarshim Ritzono Mamish. Most people in such a position are not really divorcing of their free will. Ela bal karchem sh'omer rotzani. They're doing it against their will, but they're saying rotzani. V'hizbir ha-rambam, sof perek beiz gerishin, danu toilin machmas yisur, v'hechrech nifkaf yisro, v'chayzim makarish rotzim adasi hodis. That we see from the Rambam's words that this person, he's now going back to his roots because his Yetzirah is knocked out, and he's expressing a desire to be Jewish. And based on that, we make a get Ma'usa Kedin. So therefore, says the Chassam Sofer, just exactly like Aryeh by Mummer also, I'll call upon him Berega HaGerishin, who chos l'tamuso l'fisha. So at that time, he agrees with his original source. He goes back to his simple roots. And that's what happens. V'im came v'oso shohu, eino chofitz v'oso Hashem sh'nis nakirbo. So he says, therefore, this name that he took on when he converted, he's not going to want that name. If you're going to write that name on the get, you see the point? It's going to be a contradiction. Because when he used to be Chaim, and he now calls himself Christian, right? So if you're going to put the name Christian on the get, it'll be a stira, because it's not Christian who's doing this, it's Chaim. You hear the word? So for that reason, you shouldn't put Christian on, you should put Chaim. Fascinating idea. So he doesn't get into the whole Marik, but you see that he assumes that this is the Pshat in the Rambam. And he says, this is also the view of the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish, Hilchos Gittin, Tzadi Tes Aleph, says that Kfiya works even for a Mummer according to the Rambam. And his language is, Mashakasav Shem Me'achar Shuroitz Liyos Mi'Yisrael, V'rosu L'Asos Kol HaMitzvos. That which the Rambam wrote, that since he wants to be like the Jews and he wants to do all the mitzvos, kashu lefarshum kavanoso zal chutz milagarish. It's hard to say, like we discussed before with Morty's point, that it means, oh, he's interested in all the other mitzvahs except for the mitzvah of Gerushin. Demilo askinan she'eino meshamer gam shar mitzvahs. We're talking about a guy who doesn't follow any mitzvahs. V'chi ein kofin rak mitzadi gomer. We assume that we only apply kfiya when somebody is an absolute tzaddik. Elenir lefarish must be the ritzon lomar the lula yitzol shetakfo. Were it not for the eight sahara which is overcoming him, higher ritzon liyosmi yisrael v'lashmor v'lasos. He would want to be like a Jew and to keep the mitzvos. V'hilkach shekishakofin osol asos mitzvah chashiv ratzon. And therefore, we compel him is considered to be willing. V'afilu mummer kaifin le'legarish. So therefore, mummer too, you can force him. V'odachlechu aposkim in the Shulchan Aruch eloi kaifin le'mitam mummer. Whether or not we force him because of the fact that he is a mummer. Let's say he's a mummer who happens to have one of the other things that means you have to get divorced. Says the Chazanish, everybody would agree that you are a kofahim. Like we just saw, so the ratzon is a din Torah ratzon. The chazina, and so we see the afa chazanish pshita lebe divrei Rambam the mahani kfiya, right? So clearly the chazanish also agrees that he also doesn't bring the ma'arik at all. He doesn't think that this is an issue that the Rambam could just as easily be said for somebody who doesn't hold from any mitzvahs, like Arya was saying. So now this is the last paragraph. Just wanted you to see, and then we'll close. So says Rav Goldberg. So since there is a lot of logic to say like that, to say like the Chazanish and the Chasam Sofer and Aryeh Sklar and everybody else, that the same logic the Rambam says by this one mitzvah could apply to all mitzvahs, and it doesn't seem so compelling that we have to distinguish. So what's Pshat in the Marik? Why is it that we have this view that it would distinguish? Why don't they say like this? So here he wants to explain that you could say that with the Ma'arik and other poskim who make this distinction, why do they make that distinction? So he says, that's based, says this offer, on my mashal, the mashal that he gave about the guy who's kidnapped and your friends are beating up the captors. So that could explain those who think the Rambam wouldn't apply here. The Adam HaShavi b'day Yitzro, Damal Adam HaShavi b'day Shoviav, that person who is captivated by his Yitzhahara is comparable to a person who's been kidnapped by people, v'nefach le'eved etzel shoviav, and he's made like a slave to them. V'rov avadim elu, shenasu avadim b'karchach, most avadim who are forced into slavery, kishiyesh l'mizdamnus l'vroach, v'lotzis l'cheirus, if a person has an opportunity to run away and to go to freedom, v'kigon shabo v'hiku v'shaveihem, like somebody comes and beats up their captors, oh, Oz, him nechlotzim, uvorchim, v'yotzim l'cheiris. Then they run away. That's what most of them would do. Ach yesh ma'at avadim, there are a few slaves, asher hisragu l'chayi avdus, who have gotten used to a life of slavery. V'nichalahem b'afkeru, and they're happy in this unregulated life. Ad shegiu l'matziv sh'omrem, and I quote the pasuk, ahavti es adoni, lo etzei chavshi, and they get to that point where they say, I'm not interested in going free. I love my slave life. And so too, that's true by those who are captivated by the Yetzirah. The Sfira Leila Marik, the Mummer Shaparak Me'olav Kalatara Kula, the Bachar Hefkeris, that a Mummer who has thrown off all of the Torah and has chosen Hefkeris, Nikolai Aflachachila Lishar B'dei Adonoha Yetzirah. He's happy to stay with his Yetzirah. V'af shemakimus adonoh Yetzirah. That there is still a type of person who, even when he's enslaved and somebody comes and beats up his captors, he's still not going to run. Even during that time, he's not going to run. U'v'chol zeh, omei v'tzoek, ahavti es adoni, v'eni roitzeh lotzeis l'chavshi. I love my master, I don't want to go free. V'sfirlei l'marik v'dimei, v'tekei gavna, gam ha'rambam yodeh, so Ma'arik is going to hold that in that case, even the Rambam would agree that even after he has been hit, he's not going to want to go out, and maybe that's how the Marik came to his reading of the Rambam, that there is such a person who, even during this moment, is not going to have any interest in following the Torah. Hi.
Well, when he's being beaten, he's willing to give a get after that point. So obviously his Yetzer is being subdued, at least for that moment. That's the whole point of the Rambam.
Well, yes and no. The Rambam's point is that we see that he's willing and that he says Rotzani, but the Rambam still has the question, okay, he's willing, he says Rotzani, but we know that's not real willing. Rotzani is not enough. He has to actually also be willing. So to that, the Rambam says the mitzvah fills that in.
So he's saying, even though it's true that the Mumar would be happy to stay, so to speak, the captive or the slave, in other respects, but at least in this respect, he is not happy to remain a slave. He wants to give the get at that point. Otherwise, if we're beating him and he doesn't want to give the get, then there's no point.
The Rambam was already saying in the normal case, the Rambam is saying that we have two elements here. Right? He has to give the get, so that the beating gets him to give the get. And he has to say, Rotsani, to make it willing. He says, Rotsani, isn't it a fake Rotsani? No, it's not a fake Rotsani because he wants to do the mitzvahs. But here it is a fake Rotsani, maybe, according to this reading, because he doesn't want to do the mitzvahs. So in such a case, then yes, he's giving the get, but it's a fake Rotsani, and that's not going to be enough. So just to quickly review, we spoke about, and then we'll daven. And again, so this will just, let's try to crystallize this, because this will be our break, the getting sick until after Pesach, so tomorrow we'll do Pesach and Yanim. So try to chazer this well, and we'll resume from a new stage of this discussion in 2 weeks, I guess. When's our next share on this topic? When do we start again? This Monday.
Monday.
So less than 2 weeks. 2 weeks from yesterday, we'll continue this topic. But so just to crystallize what we spoke about today, so the question of where the Rotsani fits in, we discussed yesterday how the Nesivus explains the Rotsani as different from the Get. So we spoke a little bit about whether Tosfos and Baba Basra, the two answers of Tosfos and Baba Basra, do they reflect differently on this? The one answer that is, the second answer being that the mitzvah accounts like money. What about the first answer that's because he's off the hook for a sherek susvi olma? So how exactly do we factor all that in? We compared both answers to different approaches. The Gemara Baba Kama has about Shomer Aveda being considered a Shomer Sachar, and then differentiated between them. And then we talked about how the Avnezer has a tshuva that the Rotsani is there for because the whole Isui is only Midrabanan because of Shikusayu, and therefore we do the Rotsani to make it Daraisa through the process of Dvar Shibalev. And we discussed the Vyan David, who disagrees with this. He says Dvarim Shebelev will be Dvarim because he's actually making it very clear what his Dvarim Shebelev are, so it's under the Mucha. And also, since the mitzvah is a mitzvah Lishmo, it doesn't matter whether the motivation is a mitzvah Derais, a mitzvah Derabanan. The point is, whatever mitzvah it is, got him to decide to go along with it, so it's all the same effectiveness. And he was discussing that if the Chasam Sofer has a tshuva, that you can be kofa based on the Havla Recha Kamocha, can that be grounds for us to be kofa today without a clear mitzvah? So ultimately he says no, because it's not based on that, it's based on Mishvul Shmoa Divrei Chachamim and various other kashas. If you read the Shuv, he has four kashas on the Chasam Sofer. And ultimately says the path in such a situation is to be kofa the monetary obligations, and he can give the get to get out of the monetary obligations, and that's legitimate. And we parenthetically mentioned how we confront shilas like that all the time nowadays. And then we went back to the issue of the machlokas, the chavis yar, and the rabban, as far as what the makas accomplished. And we mentioned Yosef Goldberg's mashal to explain why the rabban is correct, even against the chavis yar's question that he wouldn't give it if there weren't more makas coming. And then he used that mashal also to explain another machlokas, that the assumption that the rabban's logic wouldn't apply if the person was a mummer. So we saw that there were some early Gedolim who said that, but there were many who disagreed, among them such Gedoli HaChronim as the Chasam Sofer and the Chazon Ish, and in fact there's a lot to support such a position, so why was it that the Ma'arik and others felt otherwise? So he gave that a mashal as an explanation, that maybe if you follow that mashal through, you could come to the conclusion that there would be a situation where even a person who's in captivity would not be interested in leaving even for a minute, and maybe if that's the case, the get would never be considered to be Beratzon. All right, so I look forward to seeing as many of you as possible tomorrow for Nehru Pesach, and we will now have a minute.